You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I am Gunnery Sergeant Hartman, your senior drill instructor. From now on, you will speak only when spoken to. And the first and last words out of your filthy sewers will be, sir. Do you maggots understand that?
Sir, yes, sir.
Bullshit, I can't hear you. Sound off like you got a pair.
Sir, yes, sir.
If you ladies leave my island, if you survive recruit training, you will be a weapon. You will be a minister of death praying for war. But until that day, you are pukes. You are the lowest form of life on earth. You are not even human fucking beings. You are nothing but unorganized, grabastic pieces of amphibian shit. Because I am hard, you will not like me. But the more you hate me, the more you will learn. I am hard, but I am fair. There is no racial bigotry here. I do not look down on niggers, tykes, wops, or greasers. Here you are all equally worthless. And my orders are to weed out all non-hackers who do not pack the gear to serve in my beloved Corps. Do you maggots understand that?
Sir, yes, sir.
Bullshit, I can't hear you.
Sir, yes, sir.
Sad day in our house. The Gunny. No longer with us. So we'll celebrate him today. In our house. The, obviously a ton of news over the weekend. But, personal business obviously always comes first in our house. And Arlie Ermey put smiles on faces of all kinds of Marines, starting from his roles in movies, Firebase Gloria, most notably the audio you just heard. He is a technical advisor on Full Metal Jacket. The actor trying to play the drill instructor can't do it. And at some point, the director turns to the producer and says, why don't we just have him do it? Or so the story goes. And then when you saw him, right, when you saw him play that part, on the big screen, you watched it, and you're like, wow. That, to me, that's the best part of the movie. The back end of Full Metal Jacket gets, is full of editorial content and whatnot. But some people that care for it, some don't. But the front part of it, the boot camp stuff, that's legit, man. He wasn't even acting. Can you imagine him? He's probably laughing his ass off. I'm getting paid to be a gunnery sergeant and just do the shit that I did. And they're paying me a ton of money to do it. Oh my God, I'm sure he laughed his ass off. But it started a career in which he became, the gunny. Right? And so, you know what? I never had the occasion to meet him or be in his presence. I mean, he was around the Marine Corps all the time. And, but for whatever reason, I never got a chance to meet him. He's born in Emporia, Kansas in 1944. So grew up in the shadow of World War II and, joined the Marine Corps in 1978. So I will tell you the thing that, first of all, I remember, I don't know if I'd seen, I must have seen the movie Full Metal Jacket. I must have seen it because at the basic school they would use, you know, clips of, of all kinds of stuff, and in order to as motivational little clips before. So I'm sure I'd seen his Gunnery Sergeant Hartman stuff, but because there was no YouTube, right, and because there was no internet, you tended not to see that much of that stuff. So I remember the first time I saw him, like on a regular basis, was when he did Mail Call. And he was hilarious in that. All right, and so when they'd go to commercial, you know, he'd look at the screen and say, you know, all right, fat body, don't go to the kitchen and get another donut. Stay right there. We'll be right back. I mean, he was just hilarious, right? How much he loved, you know, shooting guns and, well, this is going to be awesome. And then they'd blow the hell out of something. And so and that was just him being the gunny. And he, you know, he became – that he became that guy. His biography says in 1961, at the age of 17, he enlisted in the Marine Corps, went through recruit training in San Diego, being from Kansas. He was an aviation support Marine before he became a drill instructor at MCRD in San Diego from 1965 to 1967. He served in various billets in the wing. 1968, he was ordered to Vietnam with Marine Wing Support Group 17. Spent 14 months in country. The major of his service was on Okinawa, where he was advanced to the rank of staff sergeant. Medically discharged in 1972 because of several injuries incurred during his service. He was made an honorary gunny. Hell, he would never even a legit gunny. What's up with that? He was made an honorary gunnery sergeant by the Commandant of the Marine Corps, James Jones, on May 17th. 2002. How he got into movies is interesting. He's attending the University of Manila in the Philippines on his GI Bill. And because he's down there, he played first air cab helicopter pilot in Apocalypse Now. And he doubles as a technical advisor based on his time in Vietnam, his knowledge of helicopters and whatnot. And then he was cast as Marine drill instructor in the Boys of Company C. And then he plays Gunnery Sergeant Hartman and Stanley Kubrick's Full Metal Jacket. And as the story goes, this is in his biography. Initially, he was intended only to be a technical advisor. Kubrick changed his mind after Ermey put together an instructional tape in which he went on an extended tirade towards several extras, convincing Kubrick he was the right guy for the role. The seeking authenticity for the film, Kubrick allowed Ermey to write or edit his own dialogue and improvise on the set, a notable rarity for a Kubrick film. Kubrick later indicated that Ermey was an excellent performer, often needing just two or three takes per scene, also unusual for a Kubrick film. His performance in Full Metal Jacket won critical acclaim. He was nominated for a Golden Globe as Best Supporting Actor. How about that? I'm sure, I mean, it would have been fun to, you know, and we tried to get him on the show a number of times, but he had a couple projects going. He was in Europe for a period of time last year, and then he's having some health issues. So, sadly, we're never able to do that. But this morning, we certainly remember him and how he made us all, how he made us all smile. I'm looking for the video, but I can't find it. He was on, it was 2004, it was November, Toys for Tots was going on. He was in Times Square for the kickoff of the Toys for Tot drive that the Marine Corps Reserve did. And and so he's on the Today Show. And I want to say he was in his dress blues, if I recall it right. So he's in his honorary dress blues, being an honorary gunny and all that. And so Matt Lauer, coincidentally to his appearance, Yasser Arafat had died. And so, you know, they welcome Lee Ermey to the show. Wasn't the first time he'd ever been on. Wasn't the first time that he'd ever been on the Today Show. So Matt Lauer says, hey, you know, Gunning, great to have you back on, blah, 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 blah. So Lauer says to him, a huge mistake. Gunny, before we talk about Toys for Tots, your reaction to Yasser Arafat's passing. And he just goes off. I celebrate the death of a terrorist. He said, I'm dancing today. I'm dancing on his grave. And Lauer is now trying to get him to stop. And he did stop. He said, it's a great day when a terrorist dies. And he, it is. And I was sitting there eating breakfast, or I don't know where I was, maybe eating dinner since we were ahead and the Today Show was on. So it would have had to have been dinner. And I almost spit my food out watching this carnival show. It was awesome. And so then they do the bit, the little thing about Toys for Tots. And so then when they get ready to sign off and, you know, they thank him and he says, no, you don't need to thank me. It's a great day. A terrorist is dead. Then they can't get away from him. They can't get away from him. So anyway, but the again, mail call though was what I saw him on the most. And what a great career and a great life he had playing himself. Playing himself or a version of himself, which I think all great actors wind up doing. That's what Jack Nicholson just plays himself, right? They don't play characters. Themselves are fit into a character. So anyway, I'll read you an email here. Now you have a great reason to watch The Boys in Company C, which I think is a better portrayal of a drill instructor by a younger gunny, 1979. Recall I sent you that YouTube clip a while back when you were on a YouTube roll. I don't recall that. I'm sure it happened. I simply don't recall that for whatever reason. I've never seen, I don't know, I've probably seen Boys of Company C at some point. You know, you wind up bumping into most of this, this audio and video about the Marine Corps. So I'm sure at some point I've seen it. I'm just not recalling it now. All right, we've got a whole bunch of stuff to do this morning. There's a series of audio clips I want you to hear from over the weekend. And so we will do that. So on a Monday morning to you. national anthem and the Marines hymn this morning dedicated to Staff Sergeant Ronald Lee Ermey, United States Marine Corps. Staff Sergeant Ermey. 9A is real rank Staff Sergeant. Honorary Gunny, but he doesn't have to be in death in anything that he wasn't in life. He was our Gunny. And but, you know, it's kind of interesting. In the picture that he has, I believe the rank insignia of him, this is his, kind of his mail call picture where he used to wear these, his soft cover. It looks like the rank is that he wears is the rank of a staff sergeant. I can't be sure because the picture's not that clear, but that's the way it looks to me. Interesting. This is dedicated to the Gunny.
Can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
Let me be clear. As hard as the last 16 years have been on our military, no enemy in the field has done more to harm the readiness of the U.S. military than the combined impact of the Budget Control Act's defense spending cuts, worsened by us operating in 9 of the last 10 years under continuing resolutions, wasting copious amounts of precious taxpayer dollars. If you don't get the resources, my closing words, then your strategy is nothing more than a hallucination, because without the resources, there's just so much brave young men and women can do.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day. And Sergeant Major, I'm very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right. We got stuff to do. We'll whip around the weather. Currently cloudy in Quantico, 51. Small craft warning. Camp Lejeune's got five weather alerts with clouds in 72. Gale warnings at Camp Lejeune. Winds out of the southwest at 15 to 25 with much higher gusts possible. Granbury, Texas, sunny in 54. Montana's got sun in 44. Tornado Palms got clouds in 62. Pendleton clouds in 52. Okinawa, dark, cloudy, 65. Marja, cloudy, dark, and 79 at the home of All Marine Radio. We got two weather alerts here. What the hell is that? Partly cloudy, 54, headed for 64 today. Nice over the weekend. Actually hot on Saturday. What? Gale warnings? From 3 to 6, from 3 o'clock? Till 3 a.m. on Tuesday, so it's going to be windy. Occasional gusts over 40 miles an hour. Well, that's good to know. We'll get through that. 70 on Tuesday, 70 on Wednesday. All right, so what's in the news today? Obviously, the attack on targets in Syria. So I just want to lay, so I read over the weekend, somewhat ironic because this discussion got going with on this program anyway about the collision course that Israel and Iran are on in Syria, and that is the looming war. Okay, everything else is dancing around that. So what I want to do today is I want to take you. I put together a series of audio cuts, some having to do with reaction, some people explaining. And then some people predicting the future, blah, 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 blah. So, the first thing I want to play is I want to play a clip that has John Kerry, Susan Rice, and then President Obama. And, what's really amazing, when you think of how we got to this position. And first of all, when you think of the United States, you have to think of the leader of the free world, okay? That the United States, as the leader, it's got responsibilities around the world, okay? And so, you know, as if you've never been outside the country, you've never served, you've never seen the greatness of what the things the United States does on the planet, with all of our warts and all of our imperfections, okay? Much of it on TV over the weekend, okay? So with all of our imperfections, there's nobody that does what we do, right? There's nobody. So this whole contest in the South China Sea, what is that? That is the rule of law, the internationally agreed upon laws of the sea, the right of international passage. All of that is being disputed by the Chinese. Yeah, it's all being disputed by the Chinese. So who stands up for that? The United States does. And what does Chinese stand up? What do the Chinese stand for? Well, they're trying to grab all the mineral rights in the South China Sea. They're trying to prohibit international navigation through there. as they attempt to either flex their muscle or create whatever they're trying to create in terms of a buffer zone relative to China. Huh? That's not the way the world is. And so when you don't travel, if you've never seen this stuff, I don't think you have a good grasp of what the United States does. I mean, we vilify ourselves and we talk about all the horrible things the United States has done around the world. Well, let me tell you, that list is it pales in comparison with the great things we've done around the world. And people that won't admit that are liars. Okay? And so this audio starts with John Kerry on Meet the Press with David Gregory. And again, it's a theme of the show, but the weakness of the Obama administration is incredible. And, you know, again, his social skills aside, history will judge him harshly. And I'm not a hater. You know, it simply is what it is. So David Gregory has John Kerry, Secretary of the State, on, and they're talking about Russia's behavior, okay? So here's what Russia's done. He's on talking about what is the United States going to do because the Russians are implicated. The Russians are implicated, I know, it's like the stupidest shit in the world, in the downing of that airliner over the Ukraine, right? That they mistook for a cargo aircraft, evidently. So they blow it out of the sky. They won't allow anybody to go near the wreckage. They take the black boxes, all that shit, right? Remember that? Now, this is after the annexation of the Crimea. And this is the destabilization of the eastern part of the Ukraine, exactly with irregular forces, exactly the way they did it in the Crimea. Okay, so you're going to hear John Kerry. And towards the end of it, you know, he crows about how we've eliminated, and it's interesting because you're going to hear this phrase repeated by Susan Rice. Actually, you hear Susan Rice first. We've eliminated the entirety of the declared stockpile. Okay? Now, when you think of that, think about Bill Clinton getting his X-Acto knife out, right? Talking about, you know, I did not have sexual relations with that woman. Footnote, as I've defined sexual relations, which do not include oral sex, okay? The entirety of the declared stockpile means we don't know what the hell they have in Syria. All we know is this is what they put on the list, and the Russians told us that that was destroyed. We're going to declare victory. So I want to take you to a little trip down memory lane. Susan Rice, I want to say about, what are we, April? March, February, about 15 months ago, I want to say, in January of 2017, this is, you'll hear Susan Rice, then you'll hear John Kerry from, I want to say, about a year and a half before that, and then you hear Barack Obama, and they're all talking about the same thing, the great success the United States had in Syria with the cooperation of the Russians. And understand this, what they did was they ceded control and the lead of what happens in Syria to Russia. And now what we look at today is a larger war with two belligerents that will fight, no doubt in my mind. So here's Susan Rice. Oh, hold on. I turned on the wrong channel.
The Russians have doubled down in backing Assad, along with Iran and Hezbollah. And the president made the fundamental choice not to intercede in the civil war between Assad and the opposition.
Although his critics point to that often as a crucial...
This is an NPR interview, so they'll be gentle with her.
mistake. When President Obama articulated this red line that Bashar al-Assad could not cross or there would be military repercussions by the U.S., and then he used chemical weapons, and then the U.S. did not respond.
There's two different things here, and I want to separate them. One is the broader question, which we could have confronted at any point over the last 5 years, as to whether or not the United States ought to intervene in the civil conflict between Assad and the opposition. I think that was fundamentally the right choice for U.S. interests not to intervene. On the so-called chemical weapons red line, indeed, we had put in place the assets necessary to use force to try to strike at those chemical facilities and command and control entities that we thought were relevant to our chemical weapons concerns.
So why didn't it happen?
Because in the meantime, we were able to find a solution that actually removed the chemical weapons that were known from Syria in a way that the use of force would never have accomplished. But the fundamental problem of Syria persists, and that is that there's enormous human suffering, and we have not, we, the United States, the international community, the UN, Russia, everybody else, has not managed to find a negotiated solution, which would by necessity mean dealing with the problem of Assad continuing to govern Syria in the most violent and repressive way.
President Obama is not a man who speaks off the cuff often. There's a lot of thought that's put into the language that he uses. Do you regret the articulation of a red line in Syria?
It's not for me to regret or otherwise. I think the president stated the U.S. view, which is that the use of chemical weapons is not something we're prepared to allow to persist. And we didn't. We managed to accomplish that goal far more thoroughly than we could have by some limited strikes against chemical targets by getting the entirety of the declared stockpile removed.
It was much more effective than simply a strike. All right, that's Susan Rice maybe 15 months ago. All right, John Kerry prior to that.
Given that, and what comes next?
Okay, again, remember, so the backdrop of this interview is the downing of a commercial airliner with what, 300 civilians on it? By Russian-sponsored, if not Russian forces themselves.
Washington Post has editorialized this weekend, what was missing from the president's comments when he spoke out on Friday was a clear moral conclusion about the regime of Vladimir Putin or an articulation of how the United States will respond. What about it?
Well, we're in discussions about that right now. I had a conversation yesterday with my counterpart, Foreign Minister Lavrov. I made it very, very clear that we need this cooperation. We're going to try to find a way immediately to determine whether or not that's going to be forthcoming. As you know, President Obama, only the day before this incident took place, unilaterally moved in order to impose tougher sanctions. And he imposed sanctions on Gazprom, sanctions on energy companies, sanctions on military companies. We've taken tough sanctions. We hope this is a profound wake-up call for those countries in Europe that have wanted to kind of, you know, go slow and soft pedal this.
But call Vladimir Putin what he is. What is the threat that he and Russia present to the United States and to the West?
It's not a question of the threat that they present to the West, David. It's a question of whether or not you're going to get the cooperation necessary in a way that they have said that they would. And we're trying for the last time to see if that will be forthcoming at this moment or not. But obviously, the additional sanctions are reflections of the president's, exhaustion of patience with words that are not accompanied by actions. Going back to the meetings that I had with Mr. Lavrov in Geneva a couple months ago now, the fact is they agreed to do certain things, and the Ukrainians agreed to do certain things. Ukraine declared a ceasefire. 26 soldiers of Ukraine were killed during the course of the ceasefire. We need Russia to publicly start to call for responsible action and itself take actions that they can take with the separatists that they have encouraged, they have inflamed, they have supplied, they have trained, and that are still engaged in a contest for the sovereignty of Ukraine itself. Russia said they would respect the sovereignty of Ukraine.
But that
is not respectful to be transferring those weapons across. Well,
But I detect in your words, Mr. Secretary, some reluctance to make this a one-on-one battle. You want to give Russia a little bit more.
It's amazing, isn't it? Russia plays us like a mandolin, okay? They know, and they knew President Obama didn't have the spine to dig his heels in and say no. No means no. He wouldn't sell the Ukrainians TOW missile systems. And here you have his Secretary of State dancing around. You have a guy from NBC calling out the Secretary of State for being soft.
Room here, but the question is still about consequences. How can anyone view this as anything other than the lowest moment between the United States and Russia in the post-Cold War environment?
David, you know, you can get into these grand sort of proclamations about where things are and where they aren't. The fact is, we live in an extremely complicated world right now where everybody is working on 10 different things simultaneously. Russia is working with us in a cooperative way on the P5 plus one. We just had important meeting.
P5 plus one is Iran. The Iran nuclear deal. All right. That beauty that they gave us.
In Vienna.
This is about Iran's nuclear program.
In order to try to deal with Iran's nuclear program, Russia was constructive and helpful and worked at that effort. Russia has been constructive in helping to remove 100% of the declared chemical weapons from Syria.
Did you hear that? 100% of the declared chemical weapons in Syria. And there's your Secretary of State. What a great job, huh?
In fact, that was an agreement we made months ago, and it never faltered, even during these moments of conflict. So this is more complicated than just throwing names at each other and making declarations. There has to be a continued effort to find a way forward. And that's what we're trying to do, but we've made it clear even as we do that. There's no naivete in what President Obama has done with respect to these very tough sanctions. And the United States has been working diligently with Europe, trying to bring Europe along. They've included additional sanctions. We think, frankly, that they may need to be tougher. And it may well be that the Dutch and other...
It's amazing, right? The double talk and the political speak and the gobbledygook, all this wrapped around, you know, some alternate form of reality other than peace through strength. Okay? Peace through strength. Strength. Who was noticeably absent over the weekend? Germany, right? The largest power in the EU, larger than the UK, larger than France, is Germany. Germany freeloading again on the backs of everybody else. Germany having no part in any of this. At what point will Germany step up to help right the order and right the turbulence in Europe so that unequivocally clear messages are sent?
Others will help lead that effort because this has to be a wake-up call to Europe that this has to change. We cannot continue with a dual-track policy where diplomacy is winding up with nice words and you know, well-constructed communiques and agreements, but then there's a separate track where the same policy continues.
Let me ask
this
you...
This is a moment of truth for Mr. Putin and for Russia. Russia needs to step up and prove its bona fides, if there are any left, with respect to its willingness to put actions behind the words.
You know, again, go down the list. The Ukraine, right? The Crimea, the downing of that airliner, Iran, China, North Korea. And what you get is weak, 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 weak. All of it weak. 8 years of weak. The creation of ISIS gets laid at the feet of Barack Obama, telling the world that we were leaving Afghanistan as a political stunt to get elected, and then having to follow through with it, Barack Obama.
We should take great pride.
Okay, here's the President of the United States, Barack Obama. I want to say post-election December time frame. I want to say he's at MacDill Air Force Base. home of CENTCOM, taking a victory lap, and he pats himself on the back for the elimination of chemical weapons in Syria.
In the progress that we've made over the last 8 years. That's the bottom line. No foreign terrorist organization has successfully planned and executed an attack on our homeland. And it's not because they didn't try. Plots have been disrupted. Terrorists have been taken off the battlefield. And we've done this even as we drew down nearly 180,000 troops in harm's way in Iraq and Afghanistan. Today, they're just 15,000. New partnerships have been built. We've respected the rule of law. We've enlisted our values in this fight. And all of this progress is due to the service of millions of Americans like you. Alongside our outstanding military work, we have to draw upon the strength of our diplomacy. Terrorists would love to see us walk away from the type of work that builds international coalitions and ends conflicts and stops the spread of deadly weapons. It would make life easier for them. It would be a tragic mistake for us. Just think about what we've done these last 8 years without firing a shot. We've rolled back Iran's nuclear program. That's not just my assessment. That's the assessment of Israeli intelligence, even though they were opposed to the deal. We secured nuclear materials around the globe, reducing the risk that they fall into the hands of terrorists. We've eliminated Syria's declared chemical weapons program. All of these steps have helped keep us safe and helped keep our troops safe. Those are the result of diplomacy.
How about that? Yeah, you didn't know that, did you? It was all eliminated. There you have the Obama administration's ambassador to the United Nations. You have the Obama administration's Secretary of State and the President of the United States, Barack Obama himself, right? All beating their chest about the elimination of chemical weapons. And then who do they trust? You get in bed with Russia? What do we know about Russia consistently? Liar, 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 liar. Okay? Again, it's crazy. There's a very, very interesting article I found. It's called Syria, Reaping the Storm Obama Sowed. And one of the things I like to do is, that I would recommend, if you want interesting stuff to as events around the world happen, pop up Al Jazeera in the Middle East, and then pop up like the Jerusalem Post or a Jerusalem or an Israeli news publication. You see very, very different news articles get published, a very, very different perspective. And this article goes on to simply document the road to what the writer called his name is. What's his name? Dr. Martin Sherman served in the Israeli Defense Force, like everybody does over there. The past years have been one of great trauma and tragedy in Syria. Sadly, ongoing trends may well herald trauma and tragedy on an even greater scale, not only for Syria itself, but for the entire region and well beyond. And then there's a kind of a sub-headline over this paragraph. On the cusp of catastrophic conflict. Indeed, barely 5 years ago, few analysts, if any, would have predicted that the world would be poised on the brink of a militarized confrontation between the U.S. and Israel on one hand, and Russia, Iran, and Syria, and possibly Turkey on the other. Yet these are precisely the emerging contours of the conflict on whose cusp we are all now perched. Much of the blame for the unfolding of this drama much of the blame for the unfolding of the drama of the human misery must be laid squarely and unequivocally on Barack Obama and his disastrous policies. And to me, it is again the it is, again, this whole notion that you can negotiate and somehow do business with dictatorships. History, if history teaches us anything, it's that strong alliances of free nations are necessary in order to sustain peace. And I don't, it's like we have trouble learning that lesson. All right, I want you to hear Syrian opposition groups. They reacted to the bombings, and what they want, obviously, is they want more. Right? And you'll hear that sentiment expressed in spades.
That Syrian American activist Bassamer Fai with me last week here on the Fox News Channel before the airstrikes. As you saw, he looked directly into the camera in an effort to appeal to the President of the United States directly.
What rolled before this audio is an interview that was done previous. The week previous, where you had Syrian activists begging the President of the United States, do something, don't continue to allow this to go on in Syria. All right, this civil war, this use of weapons of mass destruction, America has to intervene.
Like Syria, he said, in the name of the suffering Syrian people. Well, Assad's air assets, warplanes, and helicopters were not hit, as prompting some to ask if the U.S. and our allies should perhaps next consider another move, such as imposing a no-fly zone over Syria to stop the chemical attacks. Is that possible? And what else can be done? With us now is Moaz Mostafa of the Syrian Emergency Task Force. Moaz, thank you for being here tonight. First, a reaction to the airstrikes.
Well, I want to start off by saying that I am so grateful and thankful for all the American servicemen and women and those of our allies that took this important punitive measure against the evil perpetrated by the Assad regime and its supporters, Iran and Russia. And I want to thank the President for taking a decisive action and showing leadership where it was much needed in taking this step. But at the same time, I believe that more should have and can be done.
Like what?
Well, for example, I believe that the President's initial instinct was to go after the entire chemical weapons capability of the Assad regime and the possibility of grounding his air force. I think that was the right thing to do, and I think the President should trust his instincts on these things, and I think that National Security Advisor Bolton, I think, was pushing also in the right direction, along with Ambassador Nikki Haley and others that really understand what's happening on the ground. Unfortunately, I believe the delay that was made based on General Mattis's sort of risk averseness that was really not necessary in this way caused this to be less of a powerful of a strike. But I think we should keep the pressure up, and we should leverage this with a comprehensive strategy that brings an end to the killing in Syria once and for all. And we need to confront the Iranian threat in Syria. I cannot.
There's a number of issues, right? Comprehensive strategy. We don't have one. Okay. Is this an issue relative to chemical weapons use? Or is this an issue of regime change, and then ultimately a broader strategy? Okay? So it's important that gets defined. Right? Because where you decide what question got asked and what question got answered takes you a long way to the answer and ultimately how that attack was set up. All right. I would tell you that there's no other interpretation that you can make than this is a response to the use of chemical weapons by the United States. A broader strategy, I mean, hell, what? Less than 2 weeks before that, you had the President saying that he wanted everybody out of Syria. Headline over the weekend, France's President Macron said that he had talked the President of the United States out of that, that American forces are needed in the region. And I don't know who has a president's ear or who would think that us leaving the region is a good thing. Clearly it's not. Israel and Iran going to war is not, and we won't be involved in that. Hello? So, anyway, he goes on. But again, framing that question is really important, and you've seen much discussion about that, no doubt, over the weekend if you paid attention.
I say enough how dangerous Iran is there. We have worked hard, even my organization, supporting their efforts against ISIS and in confronting Iran, and I can tell you Iran is a much bigger problem for the international community
as we
defeat ISIS.
And how do you get them out? For example, you talk about taking out the warplanes. I mean, they were over in a Russian base. I mean, you attack a Russian base?
Okay. Let's talk about just a couple footnotes on Iran. Real quick, if the United States withdraws and cedes all of this to Russia, Iran, in theory, has a land bridge that extends from Iran through Iraq into Syria all the way to the coast and Lebanon. That's certainly not in the United States' national interest, and it will surely bring a much broader and a much more violent conflict in the region. So that's one. Two, how do you get them out? Well, the other part of this is the civil war that goes on. Any representative government in Syria, by any measure, is not led by the Alawites, which is Bashar al-Assad. So the only way that he can stay in power is by A, being propped up by countries like Syria and Russia, and B, them manipulating whatever happens in any kind of transition to maintain the Alawites in power. Because the opposition is Sunni. And you'll hear him go on to talk about how they feel about the occupation of Iranians in Syria, not going over well. So there's only one way Iran maintains its bases and its military power in Syria, and that is you got to prop up that dictator.
That potentially could be seen by Moscow as an act of war. You take out they're smart, you know, but at least they're there, and that they may stay there on a Russian base now because they know if they sneak out, you know, we potentially could get them. So what do you do about that? And as you talk about the Iranians, I mean, you're not going to wedge the Iranians out of that country.
Well, I'd like to say, first of all, in Syria, unlike in Iraq or elsewhere, Syria is a country where its people, by the way, despise Iran, even those, some of which that may be loyal to the Assad regime, see Iran as a foreign occupation. And the Assad regime is no longer really a government. It's essentially the biggest militant Iranian militia on the ground. As far as what we can do, there are 6 runways that are used to kill civilians that are not in civilian areas that the Assad regime uses. That's something that we could do that could be very helpful in grounding and shutting down the air force of the Assad regime as it does this. And we're not looking for a confrontation with Russia. We're not looking for anything that can come to those terms. But what this regime understands is the credible threat of force. And right now, the regime thinks that it can have a military victory, and it has had one for a large part because of the Russian IRGC, Hezbollah, Iranian support that it's had on the ground. But if the regime understands that the United States and its leadership role is serious about a political transition in Syria, and that we back negotiations and we back a comprehensive strategy to end the killing with a credible threat of force, I think we can see Assad sitting down at the negotiating table again.
That is, you're talking about the Geneva process, of course. And let me show you some video finally and lastly. Here's what the Syrians put out. It's propaganda. There he is. He's in the People's Palace. Assad walking to work alone like he'd, you know, that's propaganda right there. Like he doesn't have a care in the world, care in his briefcase. You know, it's so funny. I've been there, and when you go to these places, they have the best French food and hors d'oeuvres, and the security guys have like these cheapo leather jackets, and they want to talk about America. They asked if I live near Central Park. I mean, they were asking me about our country, and they want to come here. What is your message to Assad? Do you think you'll ever be in handcuffs before the world court as a war criminal?
I want to tell you one thing that we've worked on is we've helped support a Syrian defector who worked for the Assad regime, who took photos for the government of Assad, 55,000 pictures of men, women, children, and elderly, Christian, Muslim, Kurds, Arabs, that have been tortured to death by the Assad regime and documented by the Assad regime. As a matter of fact, that sits as an exhibit today in the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum, which I invite everyone to take time and go see. And based on that evidence, that is as powerful as any evidence we have had in recent history of war crimes, crimes, Assad and his horrible war criminals and his supporters will face their day in court, even if that may take a long time. But we will never stop the fight for accountability. And the propaganda of the Assad regime, Iran and Russia is the usual. First of all, not a single missile was able to intersect our missiles that we hit there. Russia did nothing in terms of a reaction, neither did the Iranians. And it's really, really important that we confront the Iranian threat in Syria as we finish off ISIS. And we remind the international community that the United States is still here, a leader in the world, and that Assad will face accountability and justice in the near future.
Now, I realize that certainly is your hope in the eyes of the world in Iran.
Thank you so much,
of course.
Now, there's a Syrian talking about the United States is still here. It's still the leader of the free world. And again, I think the United States is struggling with all that. You know, we have our own personality disorder that we want to retreat from those. Does that make us the world's policeman? Well, that's supposedly the role of the United Nations. But I don't know that you can back out of that. I don't think you can. I think when you're the leader of the free world, you got to be that. And I think Donald Trump struggles with it. But I think he's learning. The one thing, again, and I'll accept his struggle, because what at least he'll say yes or no. At least he'll confront the Chinese. At least he'll confront the North Koreans. Right? All this other bullshit that we've done has been ridiculous. All right, here's another reaction. This is kind of a reaction from a reporter who's in northern Syria, which is the part that where we are in northern Syria, and she gives you some sense of of what people on the ground are saying. They're I think if I could encapsulize it, there's kind of two sentiments. One is euphoric that the United States struck Syria, right? And then at the same time, the frustration that the United States isn't going to do more. So, here you have it.
So, a lot of people there's been so much anticipation all week. I think people are finally glad to see some action happening.
The reporter's name is Holly McKay, and she's in Syria.
So many people have expressed excitement. They're sitting on the edge of their seat. They're waiting to see what happens next. I'm a little further in the north, in Manbij, where it's a town under ISIS, and it's quite quiet now, and it's where the U.S. bases are all surrounding. And the response there was, A, overwhelmed with excitement that the U.S. was engaged in Syria and that finally people in the international community cared. And there was also a sense of protection having the U.S. here, that they won't be the next victims of chemical attacks here. So I think people have really underestimated how much a lot of the Syrian people really value having the U.S. presence there, and the fact that people are still willing, 7 years into this war, to fight for these people who have just suffered so much through the duration of this. So people are really excited and waiting to kind of see what happens next, and they're hoping for more. They're hoping for something that's bigger and larger, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, this has been such an overwhelming humanitarian catastrophe that the world basically let this go on. Do they fear, Holly, that, it'll be business as usual just after the last attack last year, that Assad will still continue, whether it's chemical and or other attacks, continue to decimate his people?
Absolutely, and there is a huge swath of the population that definitely has that fear and looks at these attacks and is critical of it in the sense that they want more, it's not enough. They look at the chemical weapons attacks as a sideshow. This is a war that has killed possibly more than 1 million people. The UN stopped counting these numbers. So the chemical attacks, in comparison to this entire war, is only very small. And so they're definitely hoping that somebody, anybody, the U.S., is going to stay and see this through and at least pressure the communities to come together to the Geneva Conventions and try to bring an end to this protracted conflict.
And do they have any doubt, you know, what the Russian claims and the Syrian claims, that all this is all fake and it isn't true and it was set up by the British and the Americans, that there are no chemical attacks?
That's been going on for so long, since the beginning of this war. I think people are just very used to it now. It's a kind of an eye roll moment for a lot of the people that are in this environment. They're used to that. It's nothing new to them. And it's something that people have learned to pretty much brush aside as being the propaganda that it is. And they're just hoping that there won't be another chemical attack and that somehow this can come to an end. And I think for a majority of Syrian people outside of the Assad loyal base, they don't see a future of Syria with him at the helm. So the next step is what is the next step for Syria? And they're hoping that this latest involvement with the U.S. will bring us to that conclusion.
And that eventually, they say, would be the Geneva process. So, of course, we should see Holly McKay, who's in Syria this Saturday afternoon. Holly, as always, thank you. Good to hear from you. Take care of yourself while you're there, and we'll be checking in.
All right. Ambassador Nikki Haley was on TV yesterday, and she makes some important distinctions. And she gets the next couple clips you're going to hear, you know, much controversy surrounding the president's use of the term mission accomplished. So she attempts to explain that. In my opinion, okay, the president, when he does things like this, you know, does it, he's just to throw red meat at the media. And so, he knows that the action's going to be second-guessed. And so, you know, typical of Donald Trump, what does he do? He doubles down on it, which is his style. So here's Nikki Haley.
Now, from New York, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley. Ambassador, I want to start with President Trump's tweet after the military action against Syria. Here it is, a perfectly executed...
You know, what's interesting is, of all the things that you can talk, of all the different subjects that you could lead a segment with, right? What is it? It's Donald Trump and what he tweets.
Executed strike last night could not have had a better result. Mission accomplished. A lot of people say that echoes President Bush 43's premature claim of mission accomplished back in 2003. Isn't President Trump's claim of success just as premature?
Well, first of all, mission accomplished is a military term. And as a military spouse, I know that mission accomplished means you have one task currently in front of you, and when it's completed, it is mission accomplished. Politically, mission accomplished means something broader. And I think that the president was referring in military terms. We, of course, know that our...
Nikki Haley, she's... I'll tell you what, how much has her stock gone up since she's gone to the UN? You know? I mean, wow. I mean, honestly, she's acquitted herself. I mean, she's shown herself to be somebody who, you know, after Donald Trump is finished, Nikki Haley's going to get mentioned to be the president of the United States.
Work in Syria is not done. We know that it is now up to Bashar al-Assad on whether he's going to use chemical weapons again. And should he use it again, the president has made it very clear that the United States is locked and loaded and ready to go.
Yeah, I want to pick up on that, because obviously you have no idea how Assad is going to respond to this attack, although I suspect you think that he got the message. And to add a little bit to this confusion, President Trump and Defense Secretary Mattis sent very different...
Obviously, listen to all Marine Radio.
...signals on Friday night about the campaign. Take a look at both of them.
We are prepared to sustain this response until the Syrian regime stops its use of prohibited chemical agents.
Right now, this is a one-time shot.
So which is it, a one-time shot or a sustained response?
That is totally up to Assad. What I can tell you is the president has made it very clear that when it comes to weapons of mass destruction, we have no tolerance for it. We are going to watch out for the best interests of the American people. And so he made a point, and hopefully Assad gets it. If Assad doesn't get it, it's going to hurt. And I think what General Mattis was saying was these strikes happened basically responding to their continued use of chemical weapons. But of course, if Assad continues to go forward, there will be more, and it will hurt. And I think that he has a lot to think about.
I want to pick up on that, because there are certainly indications since the first strike in April of last year that Assad had used chemical weapons, and there had been no U.S. response. This particular case last weekend was especially egregious and horrific. But are you saying that going forward that any use of chemical weapons by Assad will trigger an immediate U.S. response?
Well, I think, first of all, you said it. This last one was egregious. It was barbaric, and it was disgusting. And so I think what you saw was there had been a cumulative wave of constant use of chemical weapons. Assad knew that Russia had his back. Assad knew that Russia would cover for him at the United Nations. And Assad got reckless, and he used it in a way that was far more aggressive. We have to be very conscious of the fact that we can't allow even the smallest use of chemical weapons. That's why you saw the president strike this past weekend. That's why you saw him expel 60 Russian spies after the attack in Salisbury. This very easily could happen in the United States if we're not smart and if we're not conscious of what's happening. And so this was a message sent to Assad. We'll see how smart he is.
But to press my point, if I may, are you saying that going forward there is zero tolerance, any use by Assad of chemical weapons will trigger a military response?
Well, I don't think there's any way that I can answer that. I mean, we don't know what he's going to do, the level he's going to do, or anything else. I will tell you that the president's watching, and I think the national security team is ready. So basically, we will watch his actions. He now dictates his life, and he dictates what happens between the United States, our allies, and his regime. And so hopefully he's gotten the message. It was a pretty strong message. Not only did we go after their absolute strongest research facility, we went after their storage units where they hold the products, and we went after their production. So we put a heavy blow into their chemical weapons program, setting them back years. And I'm sure that it's going to take them a lot to recover from it.
Ambassador, here's a question that a lot of people have. You have spoken very movingly about the slaughter of civilians in Syria, and we are seeing pictures right now of the attack in Douma. But doesn't the president's policy allow the mass murder of women and children to continue as long as it's carried out with conventional weapons and not chemical weapons?
Well, I think that's just a very unfair question. In what respect are you asking that?
Well, what I'm saying is that we are saying that any use of chemical weapons we're going to respond to, but we're not saying that about conventional weapons, and Assad has slaughtered hundreds of thousands of his people. Why are we drawing a distinction and saying to Assad, it's okay to do it with conventional weapons, but we're going to object if you do it with chemical weapons?
I don't think we've ever said it's okay, period. There is no way that any American or the president would ever say it's okay to kill women and children. I think that we have a lot of issues in the world, and I think we're trying to put out as many fires as we can. We can't control what a country does to its people. We can condemn it. We can acknowledge it. We can try and do everything at the United Nations. I think what you've seen is the president has used a lot of sanctions, whether it's been in Venezuela, whether it's been related to Syria, whether it's related to Russia and human rights. There's been a lot of things that we have done and taken action. We've never sat back and watched bad things happen. We do wait and use military force as a last response to that. But we've always acted in every way related to every incident, in some form, just to let them know how much the United States condemns it.
I want to ask you about U.S. actions and how we are responding, though, when it comes to the displacement and the torture of the Syrian people. I want you to look at some State Department numbers on how many refugees have come into this country over the last 3 years. In 2016, more than 15,000 Syrian refugees came into this country. Last year, 3,000. So far this year, 11. on humanitarian grounds, how do you justify that?
Well, I will tell you, we have spent well over $6 billion on the Syrian conflict. I personally went to the refugee sites in both Jordan and Turkey. I spent time with refugees, whether they were in camps or whether they were out, and I talked to them about the situation at hand. I will tell you, from a humanitarian standpoint, the United States has been a massive donor to this situation. But also, when I talk to the refugees, what I talk to them about, they want to go home. And there's a mountain that they look over, and they know that it's on the other side, and they know that Syria is in shambles, and they are prepared to rebuild it. But not one of the many that I talked to ever said, we want to go to America. They want to stay as close to Syria as they can, so that when, God willing, this fighting stops, and when there is finally stability and peace in that area, they want to go rejoin their family members. They want to go back to what they remember. The kids talked about where they used to play and what they used to do. The adults talked about the fact that that's where they were born, that's right, where they were raised. There was a real emotional string to Syria, and I think we need to be conscious of the fact that's really where they want to go.
Let's talk about the overall strategy for Syria, because a couple of weeks ago, President Trump talked about a very fast pullout of our troops there. Take a look.
We're knocking the hell out of ISIS. We'll be coming out of Syria, like, very soon. Let the other people take care of it now. Very soon.
President Trump reportedly wanted to get all 2,000 U.S. troops out within 48 hours and had to be persuaded by folks at the Pentagon to keep them there for a couple of months, which raises the question, what is our goal in Syria and what is our strategy to get there?
Well, I can tell you, because I was in the National Security Council meetings with the president when it came to discussing Russia, and he had three major goals that he wanted to accomplish. He, one, wanted to make sure that chemical weapons were not used, or weapons of mass destruction were not used in any way that could harm American national interest. He wanted to make sure that we defeated ISIS completely and wholly, to make sure that all of that threat was gone, because it is a threat to American national interests. And he wanted to make sure that we had good grounds to watch what Iran was doing, and they weren't making a lot of aggressive headway in terms of that, because Iran is a national threat to American interests. And so I think that, no, he never thought he'd get out in 48 hours. Yes, it is all of our goal to see American troops come home, but we're not going to leave until we know we have accomplished those things. What he has done is talk to our allies and said, they need to step up more. They need to do more. And it shouldn't just be us doing it. And I think that's the right approach. But be very clear, if we leave, when we leave, it will be because we know that everything is moving forward. We're very invested in the political process in Geneva. We're very invested on a political solution, and those talks continue.
One area where there has been a dramatic escalation in the last week has been in the direct verbal attacks by the administration on Russian President Putin. Here's a tweet from President Trump this week. President Putin, Russia and Iran are responsible for backing animal Assad. And here you are at the UN.
History will record that on this day, Russia chose protecting a monster over the lives of the Syrian people.
Ambassador, has our relationship with Putin and Russia changed this week?
Well, I think it's been changing over time. This is a very strained time between the United States and Russia. I mean, if you look at what Russia is doing, they continue to be involved with all the wrong actors. I mean, whether it's their involvement in Ukraine, whether you look at how they're supporting Maduro in Venezuela, whether you look in Syria and their way of propping up Assad and working with Iran, that continues to be a problem. And there's multiple issues that we have with Russia right now and what they're doing, whether it's the chemical weapons use in Great Britain. That was another issue. So what we're doing is we're letting Russia know this is not something that we want to be a part of. It's not something we're going to tolerate. And they've got to make a decision. Right now, they don't have very good friends. And right now, the friends that they do have are causing them harm. I think they're feeling that, whether it's been with the fact that We've sanctioned just recently the Russian oligarchs, which made their stock market plummet. Whether it's the fact that we gave arms to Ukraine, which makes them realize that their life is about to get harder in that region. Whether it's us sending 60 spies home to let them know that we're not going to put up with you using a chemical agent anywhere. Or whether it's the sanctions that are continuing to happen, which you'll see again on Monday, that lets them know this is not good behavior. So everything that has strained this relationship has been on the side of Russia. The military strikes did not have to happen if Russia had not covered for Assad. 6 times they vetoed chemical weapons resolutions related to Syria. And this last resolution that they had, they only had 3 votes out of 15. The international community is telling Russia that either you make a decision on how you act and when you act, or the rest of us will make a decision in isolating you.
So in 15 seconds, how would you characterize U.S. relations with Putin and Russia right now?
Very strained right now, but our hope is always to make sure we can get a better relationship with Russia. It's in our best national interest to do that, but we're not going to put up bad behavior to get it.
Ambassador Haley, thank you. Thanks for taking the time with all you've got going on right now. We'll stay on top of the latest.
The Nikki Haley's, she's good. She's good. The issues, though, that the United States is dealing with is lack of a policy in and ceding the lead in Syria to Russia. So lack of a Syrian policy, ceding the lead to Russia, and now what? Now what? And Iran and Israel on a collision course for a much broader conflict. Yeah, all facilitated by the United States. John Roberts talked about this, and there's a line here. So where is the line now? Is chlorine barrels, are those now the line? Was the United States sure that a nerve agent was used? So John Roberts talked about his sources and what they're telling him, or what they told him over the weekend.
Any time that our commander-in-chief puts armed forces in harm's
way, this is the vice president talking,
we consider every potential response, carefully examine the possibility of a response by Syria or by its allies, Russia and Iran, in this calculation. And the president made the decision to target chemical weapons facilities, having counted all the cost and the potential of those decisions.
John Roberts is live at the White House with the very latest on this story. John?
Kelly, good afternoon. The president's still at work here at the White House today. He's working the phones, talking with the UK Prime Minister Theresa May, as well as French President Emmanuel Macron. White House readout of those phone calls came on my email just about 2 minutes ago. The three leaders agreed that the attacks were successful and were necessary to deter Assad from further use of chemical weapons. The president this morning in a tweet praising his allies in this attack, as well as the men and women of the military, tweeting, quote, "A perfectly executed strike last night. Thank you to France and the United Kingdom for their wisdom and the power of their fine military. Could not have had a better result. Mission accomplished," echoing the now infamous words of George Bush after the Iraq War. Officials from the National Security Council this afternoon said they have a large volume of clear and compelling evidence that Syria did in fact use chemical weapons in Douma last weekend, specifically, and somewhat contradicting what we just heard Jennifer Griffin say, Pentagon officials are saying, and the vice president, the NSC is saying sarin gas was used. Much of the evidence that they are pegging this to is documentary evidence, video and photographs of victims showing obvious signs of asphyxiation, also foaming at the mouth, and something called meiosis. That's when your pupils contract to the point where they become like little pinpoints. Those are hallmark symptoms of sarin gas poisoning. They also have eyewitness accounts from the ground there. The NSC says that the barrel bombs that were used to deliver the gas, and there were some that were still intact, are very similar to previous poison gas attacks in Syria that have been used in the last year since that attack against Khan Sheikhoun, in which 200 people were killed, resulting in the first U.S. airstrike back on the 7th of of April of last year. Vice President Mike Pence, traveling in Lima for the Summit of the Americas, says he hopes last night's strike will change the behavior of not only Syria, but Russia and Iran as well. Listen here.
It is time for Russia to get the message that President Trump delivered last night, that you're known by the company you keep, denying on the world stage, offering resolutions that were properly rejected at the UN Security Council a few hours ago, is not a pathway toward a better relationship with the United States of America and the wider world for Russia. Russia and Iran are on the wrong side of history.
Russia, not surprisingly, has been belligerent in its response to Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, calling the attack by the U.S., Britain, and France, quote, absolutely illegal, unacceptable. President Putin denouncing what he called an act of aggression against a sovereign state committed without a mandate from the U.N. Security Council and violation of the U.N. Charter and norms and principles of international law. NSC officials note that Putin called it an act of aggression, which it clearly was. Anytime you fire missiles and bombs at somebody, that's pretty aggressive. But he did not call it an act of war. They're also very pleased that there has been no conflict with Russia so far. And Kelly, one other note that officials here at the National Security Council are flagging us to, and that is they say the vaunted Russian anti-missile defense system was active and operative last night, but did not fire. So this idea that Russia has created an impenetrable air defense system in Syria really now has been disproven. Kelly?
You know, a couple thoughts on that. Well, let me finish. I don't know if he said
another footnote to last night's attack, and of course, the President of the United States going on.
No. All right. The one, the fact that the Russians didn't fire doesn't mean that they weren't collecting and it wasn't active. It means they didn't fire. Okay, for whatever reason, if they chose not to employ it, then that's what they chose. Doesn't mean it's not effective. Doesn't mean it might not be able. It might not. Doesn't mean it can't do what they say it does. Okay, so he said the vaunted Russian air defense, blah 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 blah. Well, certainly, what the Russians and Iranians allow the Syrians to use. And according to Lieutenant General McKenzie in the Pentagon brief, those rounds were fired after we were rounds complete on target. No impact on anything. Okay. The fact that the Iranians and the Russians did not light more air defense stuff, maybe they're saving that for a time when they think it's more substantial. And maybe they collected the whole time. On these attack profiles, their tracking systems, yada, yada, yada. So, again, John Roberts. The other thing is he said, maybe, you know, it's time, the vice president said it's time that Russia got the message. My own opinion, it's time the United States and the free democracies of the world got the message that Mr. Putin is sending. And that message is this, okay? He's consistent, right? Whether you talk about the Crimea, whether you talk about the Ukraine, whether you talk about Syria, and all the other stupid shit that he's involved with. He is insistent on recreating the Cold War because that's a better model for him to sustain power in Russia. Free economic exchange, free exchange of ideas, the movement of people, none of that is good for Vladimir Putin. Okay? And trust me, Gunner recommended a Nightline, and one of the episodes in Nightline, is it Nightline? Dateline, was his motivation for doing what he does. And he saw what happened to Muammar Gaddafi. And he knows that could be him with his body getting dragged around the street if he didn't tighten shit up. So, anyway, Vladimir Putin, it's time we got that memo and we took it to heart. And we took it to heart, which only underscores that you can only have sustained peace through strength. You can only have that. And you have, you know, you have nations like Germany who are content to be just, you know, freeloaders. Freeloaders, and that freeloading destabilizes not only Europe, but in this case the Middle East. Because you have an emboldened Russia who doesn't think anybody, you know, you had Barack Obama, and Europe who just shrugs its shoulders, whatever. And then they bitch about all the refugees. Guess what? If you had a military, right, and you had a president of the United States that would live up to, and it doesn't have to be American troops all the time, right? But it does have to be American-led. So, anyway. The next few comments are all very, very interesting in my opinion. So this is Judith Miller. She's a Pulitzer Prize winning writer. She makes a comment towards the end of this little, it's about 4 minute clip about American strength. And I think it's significant. So here's Judith Miller.
Judith Miller, an adjunct fellow at the Manhattan Institute for Policy Research, also Pulitzer-winning author and journalist. She's traveled to Syria many times in the past. Judy Miller, let me ask you, because you have such rich experience in the region and the area, do you agree with this former ambassador's take on the seriousness of the message sent with last night's strikes?
I absolutely agree with Ambassador Ford. He left the administration in part because he wanted a tougher policy toward Syria and greater involvement of America in Syria. I think that what struck me about the missile strike last night was its targeted, limited, but absolutely precise objective in terms of what it wanted to accomplish. And that is reestablishing the red line or the norm against the use of chemical weapons or any weapon of mass destruction in the Middle East or anywhere. We've seen a steady erosion of that norm over time as the Syrians have begun to ramp up their capability again. So sending that message was absolutely crucial, and I think it's well in time.
Speaking of red lines, it seems that the president has an almost impossible but certainly difficult dance that he must do right around the red line you speak about, making it really clear that the United States and the rest of the world will not stand for the chemical weapons, but also not further aggravating an already tense, some are calling it icy relationship when it comes to Russia, of course, and Iran. So the narrowness, the focus, the laser focus, if you will, surgical precision in which these missiles were executed. I also heard the Vice President today speak about sustaining this effort. Judy, I'm asking you, if we sustain it, if we have to do this again and again and again potentially to drive home the message, can we maintain that type of precision, or is it inevitable that at some point this will lead into some Russian targets?
Well, I think another goal of the strike last night was to make sure that we don't have to do this again, because it was clear that the President and the Vice President today laid blame for the forced use of this force directly at the feet of Iran and Russia. Look, Bashar al-Assad does not breathe a breath without the consent and the encouragement and the enabling of Russia and Iran.
Sure.
And so they are in a position to say to their client, no more of this. And they think that they have every reason, the administration thinks it has every reason to do this, because this is the downside of last night. It did not go to the heart of our problem, which is the Iranians and the Russians are now on the ground. The Russians have two bases in Syria. The Iranians also call the shots. We have no long-term strategy for changing that situation on the ground. That's the administration's next challenge.
To come up with that strategy. So
exactly.
Let's pivot a bit, Judy, and talk about the fact that, as you say, the red line around chemical weapons, I think, is crystal clear. But we heard Ambassador Ford's point just a while ago, but there was another former Syrian ambassador that spoke earlier on the program, on the network, I should say. I believe it was Ryan Crocker.
Ryan Crocker. Mm-hmm.
And he made the point of, well, by being so focused around the chemical weapons component, we might be sending the region a message that says, Have a field day killing your own people however you want to, as long as you don't use the chemical weapons. What's your response to that ambassador's take?
Ryan Crocker is an extremely shrewd observer of the Middle East. He knows it very, very well. But I think that I have lower expectations than he does for what the United States can accomplish. I think President Trump's instinct tells him there is only a limited amount that we can accomplish. He's afraid of getting drawn into Syria the way we were drawn into Iraq. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I think the current situation where Russia and Iran and the worst of the worst are kind of calling the shots is also not tenable. But I was encouraged by the president's allusion last night to the use of not only military force, but economic and diplomatic steps that lay ahead. And that's where the United States now must put its capital. It must figure out a strategy, the use of economics in terms of sanctions and incentives, and also, diplomatic talks.
Yes, sure.
Collaborative.
Okay, so the next piece is I would tell you pay attention to. Because in developing whatever strategy that the United States now seeks to put together as it reenters this discussion of Syria and what happens in the future, right, knowing that there's a war looming there, I think her comments are spot on.
Ryan Crocker is right. This problem cannot be solved through military force alone. But without military force, it cannot be solved at all.
Certainly. Judy Miller, thank you for that.
Thank you.
American military might cannot solve this problem. But without American military problem, the problem's not going to be solved at all. Okay? And I think that's significant. I think you saw the United States flex its muscle on Friday night. It essentially, outed, Russia. What did Russia do? After all, it's don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. We just did it. Now what? They did nothing. So we'll see what happens in the future. But American military power is important as something that pushes in a certain direction and forces either diplomatic discussions. Because, again, the Syrian civil war is a political issue inside of Syria. Okay, it can't be solved militarily. Okay, so and we've learned that the hard way. You're going to hear Roger Turner make kind of an indirect comment about that tomorrow. He did a sit down with Brookings Institute, and you'll find that interesting. I'm still waiting for Roger to come on, but you're going to hear now Ryan Crocker and then General Keane, Jack Keane. Both of them are not very optimistic about the United Nations, the role of the United States and the effectiveness of the strikes on Friday night. So, they'll paint with a little bit different brush here.
All right, let's bring in Ambassador.
The next clip is from CNN. And so it's amazing. All right. Here's an anchor at a desk. Being a columnist, and if you every question that gets asked is slanted, not moderately, but substantially to the negative. So I don't watch CNN as a rule, because I just think their journalism is not they don't seek to get to the truth. I think they're all columnists as they go about their work. Let me tell you about Ryan Crocker though, and why his opinion is important. Career ambassador with the U.S. Foreign Service. Recipient of the Presidential Medal of Freedom, served in Afghanistan 2011-2012, Iraq 2007-2009, Pakistan 2004-2007, Syria 1998-2001, Kuwait 1994-1997, and Lebanon 1990-1993. So Ryan Crocker might be one of the most qualified voices. And if you've heard Ben Connerble, who's been on the program on a number of occasions, who's traveling in Europe right now, Ben will tell you that Ben was included in the task force on Iraq that Ryan Crocker put together. And Ben speaks of Ryan Crocker as the burning bush. He doesn't use those words, my words, but Here's Ryan Crocker. So whenever he speaks, you certainly ought to listen.
Ryan Crocker, former U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan, Iraq, Pakistan, and Syria. Mr. Ambassador, good morning to you.
Good morning.
I want to start with what the president just tweeted out just about 15 minutes ago. This was his tweet about the airstrikes yesterday, and I want to focus on just the last two words here where the president tweets out, mission accomplished. Of course, for a lot of people, that's reminiscent of when former President George W. Bush stood in a flight suit on an aircraft carrier during the Iraq War, saying under that banner that read mission accomplished, and of course, some of the deadliest years of the Iraq War followed that affirmation, that assertion. From your perspective, what was mission accomplished, considering that something like this happened just a year ago where there was a chemical attack and then a limited military response, and here we are 1 year later? Was the mission accomplished?
Well, clearly he could have had a better choice of words. It depends on how you define the mission. If the mission was to put missiles on a select group of targets, I guess we did that. If we're talking about where the whole Syrian conflict is going, not only is it not mission accomplished, we haven't even begun a mission. We have no strategy in Syria.
So let's talk about the mission in two separate...
Yikes. We have no strategy in Syria.
Conversations. First, limited to the chemical weapons. Based on what we know about the strikes the U.S., French, and British executed last night, do you see that what happened last night at least significantly makes it less likely that the world won't be in this place with the same chronology next April with a chemical attack, a limited military strike, as we are this April, as the U.S. and the world was last April?
I have no idea what damage we did to his chemical weapon facilities and production units. Even if we did knock them out, those are not, as I understand it, very hard to replicate. So it really comes down, I think, to a question of what are the Russians and the Iranians prepared to do. If they're going to encourage or even tolerate the rebuilding of chemical stores, then yes, that's exactly where we're going to be, and we may not need to wait until next April to get there.
So, I mean... And tell me if I'm putting this in the wrong phrase here, in the wrong framing. As long as Russia and Iran are fully committed to Assad in Syria, and the U.S. and the rest of the world are fully committed to staying out of a hot war there or directly confronting Assad or Putin, nothing is going to change.
Again, they've got the forces on the ground. They're prepared to use them in support of their ally. We cannot seem to get to the point of even developing a strategy for Syria. So I don't see Russia and Iran changing anytime soon. I wish I could say I saw something in this strike last night that would indicate that we are getting serious about dealing with the issue. It's not a military problem. It's a political problem. And by the way, I don't think it was lost on anybody in the region that we paired up with the British and the French just about at the 100th year anniversary of Britain and France dividing up the Middle East between them. So here come the old colonialists, here come the new colonialists. We'll suffer from that, too.
Let's talk about that political solution, which, as the years go on, seems less likely. The president last night said that... that the U.S. is prepared to sustain the response using both military and economic, also diplomatic levers of power to stop at least the prohibited chemical agents' use. Sustained. Are you convinced that the U.S., that the global community will sustain those three levels of power? And what could be persuasive? What could get Assad or convince Assad to stop using these chemical weapons?
Again, it will depend probably more on Assad's allies than it does on Assad himself. We've actually created a problem for ourselves. When we launch strikes against chemical weapon capabilities and only chemical weapon capabilities, we are in effect saying, hey, you know what, Mr. Assad, you can kill your people from sunrise to sunset. You know, we don't care. Have at it. Go whack them. just as they did, of course, in Aleppo, tremendous loss of civilian life, and indeed in the whole East Ghouta region. So effectively, that's what we're saying. Kill them any way you want, just don't use chemical weapons to do it.
And we know.
Yeah, and again, if that's what this is shaping into, a sustained U.S./British/French effort solely against chemical weapons, it might have been better that we didn't even start.
Hmm. All right, Ambassador
Ryan Crocker, might have been better that we didn't even start if that's all we're going to do. So again, it begs the question, what is the broader strategy in Syria? And then finally, most unkind is a conservative commentator, former Lieutenant General Jack Keane, United States Army, and here are his comments.
I want to bring in Fox News Senior Strategic Analyst General Jack Keane. General, thank you so much for joining us. We heard Heather Nowat, and we also heard from Holly McKay there on the ground to sort of get a reaction of what the mood is there. But first and foremost, I wanted to get your reaction to Heather Nowat and what do you feel after hearing that?
Well, first of all, let's credit the administration for, one, taking action. We had a previous administration that failed to, in view of such a horrific thing as the use of chemical weapons. Second, credit the administration for bringing our allies into the strike and representing the entire international community, because this really is an attack on civilization, on the international community.
It's like there's a butt coming.
Yeah, there's a big butt coming. But I think that the response is very weak, in my judgment, particularly in view of the fact that this is a follow-up attack by Assad to a strike that we had already delivered a year ago. It should have been decisive. It should have been consequential. As a result of this strike, we still leave them with multiple chemical storage sites and production capabilities. We didn't put a single glove on an airplane or a delivery system or an airfield. And what is happening? Assad made this calculation. He's trying to secure Damascus. He's been fighting for it for months. The Russians have been bombing every single day. They got down to this one place in Ghouta where the rebels were holding out. Russians bombed all the hospitals, bombed them day in, day out, almost 24-hour bombing. They were still holding out. Assad calculates, okay, I'm going to use chemical weapons. He used the chemical weapons. 6 hours later, the rebels surrendered, and they're gone, and Russian police are there. His calculation was, I'm going to use the weapon. I know the United States is going to respond. I suspect there's going to be another modest response, and I'm willing to pay that price.
Okay, devil's advocate will say, you know, we broadcasted our capability, meaning we sort of tested the waters. They see what we're capable of, and we can do more. The United States is willing to do more. It doesn't seem as if it's one and done, meaning even the Ambassador Nikki Haley will say, we're locked and loaded.
Well, that's inviting, incentivizing another chemical attack. Isn't the purpose of this is to stop these guys from using these weapons? Look, the thing that we're not talking about here is why didn't we take out all of his military capability that he has? Because we're intimidated by a second-rate power who's trying to pretend to be a superpower called the Russians, and they have put their stooges at those military bases, and we're afraid to do harm to them. That's what's not being discussed. That's the so-called collateral damage. And they threaten escalation. This second-rate power, we have a considerable overmatch of them in the Middle East, or any place else for that matter, is threatening escalation, like they did with Obama in Ukraine. And he bought into it. We should not buy into it. We've got people who are advising the president who are far too risk-averse, to be quite frank about it.
When we heard, and we heard a reaction, a statement from Russian President Vladimir Putin, it was almost immediate, which is also a little bit uncharacteristic to have a reaction so quickly. But he didn't use the words act of war. He said that they condemned the act of aggression, but not the act of war. Should we read into that?
Well, what Putin has scored a major victory here, he and the Iranians. They have propped up the Assad regime indefinitely. This thing that Heather Nowat is talking about in Geneva, that's fantasy. There's not going to be any negotiated peace. They own Syria. And they've got a victory here. And the thought that Putin would start shooting at us over our reaction to a chemical attack in Syria, which would get the United States more involved in Syria, that's ridiculous. He's not going to shoot at us. He doesn't want us involved. We're already advertising that we're leaving. And they're cheering. And we're firing a few shots as we go out the door. That's what's happening here.
All right, General Keane, thank you for coming on.
How about that? Yeah, General Keane. Russia's already won in Syria. As I said, too much euphoria, probably not a good thing. Okay? Limited strike, no civilian casualties. So the question is that a U.S. marker on the table saying that, hey, we're not leaving? What is that? And I guess we'll find out in the days to come. What is the American strategy in the region now? Is it just to leave? To allow Iran, essentially the land bridge through Iraq into Syria, to consolidate that, and then setting the stage for war with Israel? That's the American long-range plan? I find that hard to believe. So, again, I think that our response, I agree, was a skewed to the weak. The question is why? Is it to allow the Russian to put more international pressure on the Russians, right, to isolate them more, hoping that through that kind of pressure you won't have to use military pressure and you can begin to see a political settlement in Syria? But again, the Iranians can't have a political settlement because of the demographics of Syria. Anything that allows some type of representative government in Syria ejects Iran and ejects Russia ultimately. So they can't have that. So again, we'll see what happens. And again, he's right. The thing in Geneva, that thing's dead. Not going to happen. All right, we're going to take about, I don't know, a 60-second break, maybe 120 seconds. We'll take a quick break, and then when we come back, you will hear Robert Schwartz is going to join us from Montana. And we're going to talk about things like targeting boards and then how you engineer the geometry in the sky to make this thing happen. So we'll do that real quick. Gunnar will join us. All Marine Radio continues on a busy Monday. Coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.